This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Women's Leadership Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Debbie Welly Powell. Debbie's the Chief Health Population Officer at Essentia Health. I'm going to ask Debbie about women's leadership, motivation, a couple other subjects, what she does, and so forth. Debbie, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Scott. You mentioned my name and my role at Essentia Health. I just want to say that Essentia Health is an integrated provider healthcare system in the Midwest, and we serve a four-state region, including Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota. And I've been in Idaho, and I've been with Essentia for about 4 years now. And prior to that, spent 30 years in Colorado working for several large health systems.
Oh, fantastic. And let me cut right to the chase. You've grown to the very top of your profession. You're the Chief Population Health Officer, an evolving role, an evolving title. What's your best advice for women leaders?
You know, that's a great question, Scott. I think it's important to take time to know who you are and what you want as a leader. And I think that self-awareness is really critical. Knowing what I'm good at, what I'm not good at, and deciding if it's important enough to do something about it. So early on in my career, I didn't feel like I was a very good public speaker, so I joined Toastmasters. Didn't feel like I was very good at writing, so I immersed myself in practicing to be a better writer. So I think it's important to look for those resources that can help you improve your skills, because it builds confidence, and confidence is really critical. And then I would say about 10 years or so ago, I really felt stuck in my career. And I hired a coach to unstick me. And after a couple sessions, she said to me, Debbie, I really want you to take the time to answer this one question. What do you want? I said, that's it. No books, no tapes, no test. She said, no. So I happened to be hiking the rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon. And so from the south rim to the north rim and back, I hiked 20 hours nonstop, 47 miles, 27,000 feet in elevation gain. And I answered that one important question in my life. What do I want? Seems easy, but not so easy.
Let me ask you several follow-up questions to that. And I guess I'd start with that very first and most important question. What did you decide?
You know, interestingly, I decided that my family was so important to me that I wanted to bring value to an organization that I worked with, and I wanted to find a work-life balance that allowed me to, living in Colorado, enjoy the mountains, and yet making a difference in people's lives when it came to healthcare.
Fantastic. So I love the core of the advice, the knowing yourself, self-awareness. I am inspired by the concept of this concept of self-awareness, knowing what you want to get better at, knowing what you want to improve. You know, I wish my daughter and son could hear you talk about, I wasn't a great public speaker, so I went to Toastmasters. I wanted to make myself a better writer, so I did that. I found myself stuck at some point in my career, and I hired a coach. And then I would mimic everything you said. Other than I don't think I could do the 47-hour hike. I don't think I could do that. But everything else, I'm all on board with, and just fantastic, Debbie. Let me ask you another question that cuts to the heart of leadership. What works and doesn't work in leadership?
You know, I think knowing how important relationships are, Scott, at every level in the organization is critical. And in building those relationships, what I've learned, it's so important to never burn a bridge. You never know when you may have to walk back over that bridge. And I think being respectful and giving people your time and time to explain your why. So I'm big at goal setting, and I've been goal setting for over 30 years. And so leadership is about goal setting. It's creating expectations. It's creating accountabilities. And goal setting for me has really allowed me to achieve those milestones in my life that are important as a person and as a team and as a member of an organization.
So I heard several things there. Let me just stop for a second. I heard never burn bridges, how important relationship building is. And on the issue of the never burn bridges, you never know when you're going to see somebody again or need them again or have a relationship with them again. Never burn bridges. And then you talked about the importance of goal setting, and those 3 points. Debbie, was there something else you wanted to say there?
Yeah, and I think the other thing is to let things go. So I'm in healthcare, and healthcare is changing so rapidly. Cultures are changing. They're evolving. Systems are emerging. And the ability to adapt is so critical. And practicing resiliency and being okay sitting in that place of silence is important. And so even for myself, I can be impatient. And I've had to learn not to react, rather to sit in that place until there's better clarity around action. And then just on the point of what not to do, what doesn't work, is complaining. And I like to ask people who complain, what is your request? So turn your complaints into requests. And then if you have a problem, I can't solve your problem unless you tell me about it. So having the courage to speak up, to discuss what are issues, allows people to problem solve.
Thank you. And let me ask you another set of questions. Your core role today, what's the absolute thing you have to be great at in your core role today?
As the Chief Population Health Officer, my team and I support our transition from volume to value. So we have to understand what it means in moving from fee-for-service as a form of payment to a payment that rewards us for managing the total cost of care for a defined population, for improving the quality of care through the development of new care models that focus on our sickest and the rising risk patients, and for really working toward preventative and keeping people well. And so what we have to be good at is the data, and to understand the data and how the data affects our ability to understand the needs of a population. And when we reach out to that population, we're reaching out to those that are in greatest need. And so we also have to be good at risk. And so accepting risk in moving to value was a big step for us. It really was our stake in the ground. We had a sea change in culturally, financially, and operationally along our journey. We still have a long ways to go.
Thank you. And another question. I love speaking to you in part because of this constant effort to evolve yourself and get better and set goals. How do you keep yourself motivated?
Well, several things. I've chosen a career that I absolutely love. It fills my tank and brings joy. Healthcare is, as you know, is dynamic. It's forever changing, and it's about helping people. I also like to read, write, and listen to Becker podcasts. What also brings me joy is giving back and volunteering. And more recently, I've been helping women look for those opportunities to serve on boards. And we know a lot of research and information that shows that when you have more than one woman serving on a board, that organization can do better financially, it has lower turnover, and it has more engaged colleagues. And there's a quote that I often think of when it comes to giving back and volunteering, and that is, it is in service to others that you find yourself. And then the last area is I love the outdoors. When I lived in Colorado for 30 years, I climbed all the 14,000-foot peaks and then the top 100 peaks, and I started climbing all over the world. And so I'm motivated by a challenge and the next peak, so to speak, in my life.
Outstanding. And so what is that? I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but what's that next peak in your life? What's the next big goal?
Oh, well, I'm hoping to be at Everest Base Camp by the end of this year.
Debbie, we've had a chance to talk a lot about your personal growth, what you do as Chief Population Health Officer. I want to ask you two more questions about sort of population health and social determinants of health and working with the community. First, can you tell me a little bit about non-clinical barriers to care? Give us an example of those and tell us just a moment about those.
Sure. So some of those non-clinical barriers are food hunger, homelessness, housing. Do patients have adequate transportation? And those things impact their health. And we know that, in fact, one zip code has more to do with their health than their own DNA or the environment they live. And so only 10% is related to healthcare. So we have a big challenge before us as we address the social determinants of health.
Thank you. In addition to social determinants of health, how much work is it? Is all the work with social determinants of health done internally in the four walls of the clinical setting in the hospital health system, or does a lot of it rely on community partners? Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so we know that to really solve this problem, it's really about working with our community-based partners. And so it becomes a community problem to solve, and we can address their social needs. Only that 10% is on the healthcare side, and so we know that working with food banks makes sense, working with shelters, that when a patient is discharged from our ED, we know the number one thing they're worried about is where are they going to spend the night that night. And so working with local shelters to ensure that those patients have a place to go so they can adhere to their medications is critical. And even transportation centers. So getting people to their appointment, getting them in so we can manage their hypertension and blood pressure meds is critical for one's health.
You had also mentioned something, and I want to hear that stat again, that so much of a person's health care could be determined by the zip code that they're from. Could you elaborate on that for a moment?
Right. So we're talking about where they live, their education level, their poverty rates, their behaviors. 70% really relates to their behaviors around fitness and wellness and what they eat. And so to a greater degree, those components influence one's health status more than healthcare. Healthcare is important. It's important to have access to healthcare, to have it at the right time, right place. But to really address the social needs, there are much bigger issues that we need to partner with our community-based partners around if we're going to make a difference. And that is the intersection of health and healthcare, and that's called population health.
One more last question. Debbie, if this year goes well, what does that look like?
Well, many things, but what comes top of mind, Scott, is that we are piloting a food insecurity program in our organization. And if we're successful in this pilot, we will be able to expand it to our other 65 primary care clinics at Essentia. So we are asking patients during the rooming process, not at the reception area, the food insecurity question, which is an important question around the social determinants of health. And we ask them, if in the last 12 months, have you been worried that you will run out of food or not have enough money to buy food? And then for those patients that screen positively, we connect them to health workers who connect them to local food banks. And it's really interesting because some of our early learnings are not in identifying the patient, not in giving the patient the referral, but it's really in engaging the patient to follow through to go to those food banks to get healthier food. And so we're working really hard to better understand those behaviors that create patient engagement.
That's fabulous. It's so in line with where you see the movement of the chief population health officer having to, if you really want to deal with population health, having to deal with the social determinants like food security or insecurity. So, Debbie, just a fascinating situation. I have to tell you, just a fascinating to talk with you and to someone who 20 years ago saw an issue with public speaking. Obviously, you've made a great stride to become a fantastic public speaker, so it's just been great to speak with you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks, Dan. It's good to be with you, Scott.